So, all right. It's actually great because we have quite a lot to talk about today. It's a very exciting day for me and for, I think, the whole team to talk about Office 365 and Lightswitch for the business app space. You know, I think one of the things that's really different about this particular keynote and this day at Build is that there's just a huge focus on the business application space. I think almost every demo that you saw today was in some way related to the enterprise and some of the challenges that we face in building business apps. And as somebody who works exclusively on business apps, I think since I've been at Microsoft, it's an exciting time because typically the consumer apps and the games and all the cool devices that you saw like on day one, they garner a lot more of our attention. You know, they're snazzy and exciting. But business apps are really the lifeblood of what we do day in and day out. So it's good to talk about them. It's great to have them be on stage with a lot of different perspectives from Scott Guthrie. Saw a lot of the stuff from Scott Hanselman. We'll go over all that today and show you how to use a lot of those things within the context of a business app targeting O365. But really exciting. And I will clarify a little bit of the positioning and some of the things that you might have seen in the keynote. Kind of what is that? Is that in the preview? Is that Lightswitch? Is that something else? We'll talk about that probably towards the end, but as we go through, I'll try and point out what is specifically in the preview and some things that are not quite there. I should add just a few kind of quick disclaimers. We are going to look at the business app scenario first and really just focus and have maybe a brief conversation about the business app of today and how it relates to a lot of the consumer apps and how it's really quite different from the business app that we would think about maybe even 5 years ago. We'll spend, again, just maybe 5-10 minutes giving you a brief overview of Lightswitch. It seems like most of you at least have some exposure to it, so I want to make sure that we spend time on things that are new and interesting for you. And so after that first sort of quick lap, we'll spend some time on addressing the challenges that we commonly hear from customers about what it takes to really make a business app real, those unique requirements that go far beyond the sort of boilerplate code that we often focus so much of the rapid productivity tools on. The big disclaimer here is just that this build that you're going to see, I actually created it myself about 2 days ago. It's a little bit rough. We're going to see a few bumps in the road, but I did want to give you a pretty good sense of where we're going as a team within Visual Studio. So that means that you're seeing some things that aren't quite in the preview. You're also probably, I can almost guarantee you're going to see at least one crash. So you'll get to see the new Windows 8 Task Manager. I guarantee it. It's really awesome. But seriously, it's just a risk that we run in showing some of the new stuff. It's no big deal. We'll be able to work around it. So let's just kind of start by thinking back to, you know, maybe the WinForms days and some of the prior productivity tools that we would build business apps with, and contrast that with the apps that we have to build today. You know, I think when we first started working on the Lightswitch HTML client, it was really in response to a lot of customers, nearly every customer visit involving, you know, we need to make our business apps run on these things, except it had a fruit on it typically. They also had, you know, big decision makers buying tablets and phones in wholesale and wanting to run these apps on them. And I think that's really in response to the big consumerization of technology in general and the fact that people just really expect to interact with software on these devices. They expect to find these apps in different ways. You know, the store is the place where people go and find these apps. The notion of having to go to some sort of IT-managed repository, install some big MSI, it's too antiquated. It won't run on the device. People are really unhappy using those apps. It actually, there's been a fair amount of research that's gone into the attrition of employees just from dissatisfaction of using these apps. There's quite a lot of perception of a company based on the apps that you use as an employee. And we have new ways of working, right? You know, picture you at the conference here. Often we're doing work when we're walking between sessions, when we're waiting in line for lunch, and breaks in the keynote, and so on. We expect to do work sitting at our desktop. We expect to do work waiting in line for coffee, and so on. And really having an application experience that will span all of those devices and be available in all those contexts is really important. The other aspect of this is just, you know, the redefinition of an app, I think, is really key to why O365 has evolved as the premier business app platform. It really does give us a lot of the things that people just expect from apps. You know, if you think back to even the day one keynote with seeing that auto update of apps for Windows 8 Blue or Windows 8 1, people expect the same sort of thing, right? I don't expect to uninstall a business app, go reinstall it. I just want it continuously updated. So those new expectations for apps really resonate well with precisely what O365 is about as a business app platform. There is a single app catalog. You know, imagine that you are building one of these apps for all the devices in your company. The bring your own device trend is just super common now, really can't avoid it. What store are you going to put your apps on? Are you really going to build a business app to track some, you know, rudimentary business function for Android, for iOS, for Windows Phone, for Windows Store? No, right? These apps really just run the business. They're the lifeblood. But we also don't want to invest more than they're worth. And Office 365 gives us this experience of a simple discovery, a simple app catalog, where no matter where I am and what device I'm on, I can find the app. And of course, because all of this is based on web standards, it's going to run on any device. And I think it's been exciting for us to be involved in that standards process for HTML5 and all the W3C specs and just see how far the web browser technology has come. You know, when we first started this project, it was extremely hard to get a real business app up and running on all browsers. Today, it's just sort of the norm. The performance is better. The support for a lot of the markup is better. The other aspect of this is that the apps in Office 365 really are just an extension of the platform. And I think our metric for success is, if our users really perceive what we're building as developers as just an extension of Office, then I think we're successful, right? We don't really want people to be thinking about, oh, I need to go to this place to use this app. It should just be an extension of the work they're doing today. So if we switch over to our demo here, you'll see that that's kind of what we're trying to show in the keynote a little bit, is that we when we build an app, it really is inheriting a lot of the look and feel of Office. It's giving us a lot of the same experiences. And I think if we just kind of pull up this page here, it's really hard for me to understand or care as an end user where precisely the apps here end and Office 365 begins. And that's actually more what we're looking for. So here we have kind of a simple dashboard style app that's embedded in the page. That's some list UI. We don't really know or care where that's coming from. It's just showing us the same familiar look and feel that we expect. So with that, I want to just spend a few minutes going through the tools for those of you who maybe haven't seen Lightswitch. And as I mentioned to the folks who got here a little bit earlier, our perspective for today is going to be a little bit different. You guys really are our premier developers. So I think a lot of the technologies that you're going to see today will be familiar. And my kind of goal for today is to give you a sense of context in how to use those tools that you already know today with something like Lightswitch and Office 365. So let's just take a quick look at what we've got. All right, so I have a simple app sort of already created that we're going to switch to. You'll see here that we just have a few simple templates to get started. There are two language choices for JavaScript on the client. You always have either C# or VB on the server. We will just create an HTML client app today. I've already gone and done that. And let's just look at some of the differences in Solution Explorer and how we've laid out these projects. that's really different from maybe what you've seen in the past. And Jay flew through this so quickly that we didn't really have a chance to call it out in the keynote here. So the first is that with this evolution of the rapid application development tool, we really see this as just an optimized path through the tools. And it's really just a part of all the things that you do today as a developer. So we have really familiar project types here. This is just a JavaScript project. If you've built apps for the Windows Store, you're going to be using the same project. We have NuGet packages just baked in here. So if we open up here, this is going to look precisely like any jQuery mobile-based app you would build on your own. We just give you all those scaffolding pieces for free. The cool thing about this is that if we now go to the NuGet package manager and see what's installed, we'll see that for this app, our LightSwitch project has all these things installed, and we can just actually go through NuGet to update these automatically. So as developers, NuGet is really the way that we acquire new assets from the community, and it's fully integrated into the O365 business app development space as well. You'll see one thing here that's kind of a big step for us. It's kind of a subtle detail. The LightSwitch runtime itself is also available as a NuGet package. What this means is that whenever a new version of, let's say, Data.js comes out or jQuery Mobile comes out, we're not stuck waiting for the next release of Visual Studio to give you an update that will work with that. A new device comes out, there are frequently device updates that happen quite rapidly. Depending on the platform, it's every week, every month, whatever. Sometimes those updates don't work with prior versions of jQuery Mobile and you just need a fix. NuGet is the way to get that. It's the way to do it regardless of whether you're building MVC, a standard web API-based app, or a LightSwitch app. So I have everything already up to date here. We'll go ahead and close that. Our server, which is our middle tier where all the logic will basically run, it's really just a standard ASP.NET website or web application project. And what we've done is just segregate the LightSwitch information into a single folder. So now if I go ahead and add a table, you'll see that this information is added in a separate folder. It's right there alongside all the other assets that you would expect to interact with in a web project. So I can go in here and start adding things like web API just with a single click. If you use LightSwitch in the past, you know that there was kind of this weird overlay view in Solution Explorer that you had to switch between, and we've got written all of that. The other thing is because we're really optimized for building these O365 business apps, you see the SharePoint project here as well, and everything you can add to a SharePoint project is just readily available. So I'll just go and add a document library, for example. Can add a list, or we can't. And any of the assets you would expect to have there would just show up. We're going to drill into a lot more detail around that when we switch over to the sort of Julia Child half-finished app. So the cool thing about this is that with these O365 business apps, we can still use all the ALM tools that you would expect to manage the lifecycle of the app. So you can check into source control. You'll see the LightSwitch metadata files just as standard files which you can deal with. They have been broken out into separate files. So if you've worked in a team development environment before and run into a lot of merge conflicts, a lot of those are just fixed now by the virtue of the files being broken apart. So I'm just going to go ahead and add this to Solution Explorer. I think my internet connection is down, so we'll go ahead and fix that. We'll try one more time, wait for my internet connection to pop back on here. Otherwise, it's going to be really hard to do an Azure demo without an internet connection. All right. So we're connecting to TFS. Everything's added there. And you can kind of get a sense for how this would work. So if we start adding screens, you'll see that those screens are just added as individual files. And this really is important for working in a team environment where maybe some members of the team are working on a specific part of the app. They're not going to interfere with everyone else, which was historically a problem. So we can go ahead and check this in. And we're off and running. And you saw in Jay's demo continuous deployment. That's something that is very possible to do on your own today. In the demo, you saw some sort of hints at where we're headed to make that process a lot easier. If you do want to go through that, we did a lot of work in the preview to actually refactor all of the SDK that you need to actually build Lightswitch projects in TFS Online. So if anybody's interested in that process, let us know. Really, when we demoed the continuous integration, it looked like magic, but actually all it was a process template that we created specifically for that project. So I'll just quickly show you that. So here's our builds. And you can see that our new build was already triggered for check-in because I have a build definition set up. And if we go and edit this, you'll just see that the things that you would do today and expect to do in working with something like TFS Online and continuous delivery are precisely the same things that you would do here. What's different is just that we're building an O365 app, so we need to deploy to Azure, we need to deploy a SharePoint package, and so on. So in addition to getting things into TFS, we can still go through the standard publish. I will give you the disclaimer, this is usually where the demo crashes, so we have a backup ready. Oh my gosh, it worked, that's awesome. So the other path that is really common, you know, for cases where you maybe don't want to do continuous delivery because you really want a lot more fine-grained control over about how your middle tier is actually hosted in Azure, and you just go through the standard publish experience. I will say that there are a bunch of different hosting options for Office 365 apps. We're really talking about the provider-hosted model where the app is hosted in a Windows Azure website. The reason for that is just that if we switch over to the Azure website, you'll see that, you know, a lot of the goodness that you saw in the keynote around the auto scale, around just the management of the database and all that sort of stuff really is a core requirement for business apps. And I think if you're building out a real true business app, you'll find that this path works a lot better than some of the other options that are more targeted about interacting directly with documents and that sort of thing. All right, so here we have our Azure portal. All I've really got to do is download my publish profile and install it into Lightswitch. I've already done that. So we'll go ahead and go here. This is a little bit confusing in the near term. We're sort of using a short-term workaround for the preview if you're trying this on your own. We're saying that we're publishing to IIS, but I've actually imported the all the information for my remote Azure website, so we can just use that instead. I'm actually going to switch over to the other one here so you can see that. So we just went through the import settings. You can download the publish profile from Azure directly and publish, and here's the sort of really nondescript URL string that you would expect when publishing to Azure. I'm not actually going to go through the publish because it takes a little bit of time. The outcome of that is just that all of our middle tier and database is provisioned in Azure. I've already published once, so we can see that. And then the SharePoint package for our app is created on disk, and we can just install that in our corporate app catalog. All right. So let's switch back just for a second and take a look at what we've built and what this project actually gives us from a runtime perspective. And this is kind of a rudimentary, really simple diagram, but I think it sets the context for what we're about to talk about in the rest of the demo, which is more of the sort of nuts and bolts using web tools, creating different conduits of communication between the client and the server and so on. So our server project is running as an Azure website. It's communicating to that HTML client via OData. And then all the backend data sources that we're using, we're communicating using OData or some other EF provider. The interesting thing about this is that even though we add options like SharePoint as a first-class data source in the product, it's still using the OData feed that the SharePoint object model exposes. The one thing that's different as we move forward is that historically, all of these business apps have gone through the middle tier for all of their data communication. But in a lot of cases, when we're building Office business apps, the data that we require in our business app is directly in Office, and we don't really need to go through that middle tier. So using the cross-domain scripting libraries that the SharePoint object model provides, there are a lot of cases, for example, interacting with documents, getting things like the link presence. We're just going directly from our HTML client via REST into O365 is how we actually communicate with all those services. The cool thing about this is that if you want to go talk to some of the existing O365 services, then all of the references that you need in your HTML client app are just there. It's actually kind of hard today to get all of that set up properly for the cross-domain calls. But because we've set it all up for you, we do this sort of client cookie magic during startup. You can just reference whatever API you're trying to use, and you don't have to worry about all of the authentication hurdles. It's a pretty big deal, and that's how, if you saw Jay's keynote demo with the documents and things like that, that's precisely what we were doing. We're just using the existing O365 REST service for getting at a document library. We're not going through the middle tier, and it's a pretty powerful way to keep your app pretty simple and keep the management of that Azure website really focused on the data that's inherent to the app. All right. So with that, I told you we'd spend just 5 or 10 minutes giving a quick lap around things. At this point, since most of you have already seen Lightswitch, it seems like a lot of you have already played with it, I thought we'll fast forward into some newer stuff and really set the context of how we think about all of the other tools that we have in Visual Studio in reference to something like Lightswitch. So what I've got here is just a really simple app built up. All I have is my data. And for those of you who aren't familiar, when we're building up our data model in Lightswitch, all that we're doing is creating an EF model on the server, and we spin up a local DB that will host that. When we go to deploy, typically that DB will be created as a SQL Azure database. If we're deploying on-prem, then it usually will just go in SQL Server. That's great, but we know that a lot of business apps have really specific requirements about how the data inside those databases is managed. We know that in many cases, you need to perform specific transforms, maybe auditing, maybe you need to restrict reference data and lookup tables, and you want to do it in the same manner that you would do all of your other ALM type activities. So you want source control over that sort of stuff. But right now, what we're looking at here with our data entity kind of feels like a black box. So what we can do is, I'm just going to add a screen or two here, and we'll F5. And I just want to show you that there's no data in the app here. And then we're going to add a SQL Server database project. Just out of curiosity, how many people are familiar with the new SQL Server database projects? Not many. Okay, so I'll give you the sales pitch, no extra charge. So there's no data here. Here's our candidate list. There's no skills. Apparently, I have no skills. The SQL Server database project is kind of an evolution of what was affectionately referred to as the Data Dude SKU. And what this gives us is the ability to model all of the information in our database as an asset within the solution. So all I'm going to do is go ahead and add a new project. And you'll see here that it's just a single entry for SQL Server. Now, because we're using all of the existing data stack, EF, the DAC pack creation for deploying the database, we can actually just use this database project as is. It's not a specific database project for Lightswitch or O365. So some of the things that you would do here would be maybe you want to start scripting the database. We get a lot of requests for this. All right, so I'm just going to add a script to the database. And in this case, it's important to understand what's really going on in the tools here. When we create those entities in the Lightswitch Entity Designer, we're building up a model. And if I want to augment that model in some way, maybe I want to change some of the fields a little bit, add some reference data. It's important that I do that after the model is created by Lightswitch, obviously. Otherwise, we're going to get a lot of schema conflicts and things like that. So I'm going to add a post-deployment script. And what are the sort of things that you can do in here? Well, I'm not going to write T-SQL on stage here, because I haven't written T-SQL since I was in college, which was a long time ago. But the typical thing that you would do here, let me bump up that font a little bit. Sorry, it's not coming through quite as well. So all that we're doing, as you see, is that it's not just a simple insert. We're just merging in the existing values of our skills lookup table with the values that are already in the database. Is that a little bit better? Different theme? All right. So we'll switch over to blue now. We've reached the halfway point. Okay. So what's happening here is that after the database is created by Lightswitch, it's going to run this post-deployment script and insert our reference data. For the sake of argument here, I'm just going to go ahead and add some sample data as well. This is just another common request. There's nothing specific that Lightswitch is doing to enable this scenario, but because we're using these existing tools, you can just insert it, use your favorite T-SQL generator to create the reference data. So here we have a bunch of interview candidates that we're creating. And now all that I really need to do is associate that database project, which is sort of loosen the solution with our Lightswitch project. Now what's going to happen is the DAC pack, which is the database deployment package that Lightswitch creates, is going to be associated with that database project, and our SQL script will be run. Now the cool thing about this is that the database project is probably another topic in and of itself, but it allows you to really optimize for the specific platform that you're targeting. If you're targeting Windows Azure, then there are specific tools in there to target Windows Azure that you're not going to see when you're targeting SQL Server. I was a little scared there. Seemed like maybe we were going to have a little slowdown, but we're getting there. The next thing that we'd want to do while we're waiting for that to spin up is probably restrict some of that reference data. So we added a bunch of reference data for our skills. And as you can see, there's just a bunch of built-in methods inside Lightswitch. It's kind of cool that we have that bug. So you can continue to see the dropdown. All right, we'll come back in just a second there. So here are all of our entities that were added as part of that post-deployment script. If we look at our skills, they will be added as well. So this is, again, just, I think, a great example of we didn't do anything specific when building out this optimized path for O365 and Lightswitch. But because we're just a first-class citizen within Visual Studio, all the goodness that you get with managing databases in VS just is applicable to O365 apps as well. And we'll say this is probably one of the bigger pieces of feedback we've gotten with some of the first iterations of our SharePoint support is, you know, we chose this auto-hosted thing and we're not really sure where the data is. The database project is actually a great way to work through that because it gives you a lens into how the data is created and how the database is managed. All right, so we have some basic data in our app now. What I'm going to do now is create some basic relationships between these. What I want to make sure is that each candidate has some interview feedback. So I'll go ahead and add a relationship here. And now I probably want to restrict and start adding some rules here. Because you know, one of the things that's really common in almost all of these apps that we get asked a lot of questions about is things like privacy and compliance and how do we deal with that. That database project actually gets us a long way there. All the data that's in O365 already, so any lists that we're attaching with, they have things like built-in support for e-discovery, so that's sort of covered. But what do we do with the data that's specifically stored in the app? So one of the things that we've recently added is the ability to do row-level filtering. So what I might want to do here is say that only people who are actually on the interview loop for a particular candidate can read the feedback. Right? Kind of makes sense. You don't want just random employees reading interview feedback for any old candidate. So there's a new entry point here called filter. And basically what this is it allows us to author a Lambda expression, which will be executed and composed on top of any query that goes against our interview feedback. So again, I'm not going to try and type on stage. We'll just drag out our filter here, and I'll kind of walk you through it. All right, so what we've got here is a basic link query. And if you're familiar with link, this is just the same old stuff. All that we're doing here is querying who the interview candidate is. We're looking up all the interview feedback that they have. And we're making sure that the current user, in other words, the person who's actually querying the data, is one of the people on that feedback list. And if it comes back with something, then we'll return it. And if it doesn't, then we'll filter it out. All right, so now let's go and add some screens. We're just going to use the new template that Jay showed. This is one thing that actually isn't in the preview. It is something that's actually pretty easy to build yourself. There's no changes required in Lightswitch. It's just an add-on template that we created to speed up some of these demos. All right, so we have our candidates created. I'm just going to go ahead and run the app now, and we'll start to get a sense for what we're getting inside the app. So as this is coming up, how many people saw Scott Hanselman's demo of sort of making changes in Visual Studio, having the browser refresh, that sort of stuff? So again, we're a web project. A lot of those things are just going to work as is. I actually forgot to set my home screen here, so I'll go and do that. But we've also added support within Lightswitch to do exactly the same thing, even for things that are managed as part of the Lightswitch metadata. So these screens are actually just a real thin wrapper over semantic HTML, which then gets generated at runtime. So when our app comes up here, we'll see that we have a candidate list. There's a lot of people in there. You can see this email is actually probably not super useful. So maybe what I'll do is just go ahead and delete that and save. And now when we go and refresh the browser, it's gone. And you know, I do a lot of UI development. I'm definitely more of a UI person than anything else. And these types of enhancements within Visual Studio, I think, save just volumes of time in how we tweak UI and that sort of stuff. All right, so let's look at a particular candidate here. You can see that they have no interview feedback, so we might want to go ahead and add that. We'll do it in the same way. One of the things that's kind of cool here is that we actually create navigation for you for free. And this is, again, a concept that you just see in every single app, right? You need a way to navigate through pages. Historically, you would write code for that. It's just built into the model today, so we can do it via UI. So what I'm going to do is add some more screens to display the interview feedback, and then I'll show you how we can wire them up without code. So here's our interview feedback screens. And now when we view a candidate, I might want to add support to go ahead and create some interview feedback. I'm just going to add a button. And you'll see that there's just a bunch of built-in navigation methods that you can use. In this case, I'm going to use this built-in method. And you'll see that there's just some smarts built in here to narrow down the set of pages inside the app that would make sense in this scenario. In this case, we know that we're passing the candidate as a parameter to the screen or the page. So we're just filtering out the list of pages that accept a single candidate. So we'll go ahead and wire that up. The other thing that we might do is when a particular person taps on interview feedback, we might want to show them the detail screen for that. So we'll again wire that up to the add edit screen. All right. So with this type of stuff, you know, we haven't really written much code yet. And that's kind of the point, is that there's a lot of this stuff that's really boilerplate. Describing the data, describing the basic navigation flow of the app are things where the simple designer really makes a lot of sense. But at this point, we've kind of reached the end of where being effective without seeing any code or using any of the sort of existing tools is going to take us very far. So here's our skill, say problem solving. This person was really not good at it. And we'll make Jim our interviewer. So I don't know, we'll add some feedback there. I actually have a little bit of a bug, so we'll just go ahead and fix that here in our browse list. And one of the things I probably want to show is the recommendation, maybe the skill that was brought in, as well as the interviewer. And you might have seen in Jay's demo that there's just some built-in logic now when we're displaying information from O365, particularly people and documents, are just kind of well-known concepts throughout the app, so you're getting some built-in controls. This isn't something that is in the preview. It's actually quite simple to build yourself. All that we're storing is the identifier, think of it as the SID, if you will, of the person, and then using the SharePoint profile service to actually resolve that person and get their link information. So we've updated our app. We'll go over and run it here, just refresh the browser. Apparently, we didn't add it for that person. We'll give them a higher recommendation. We'll make Jay the interviewer. And we'll save our candidate. So that's all pretty cool. But if you think about using this app inside something like a phone, where I might be the person who's actually done the interview, I'm walking back to my office, and I'm going to another meeting, having to parse all of this text is actually kind of cumbersome, right? I just want to look at a glance. If I'm going to be doing an interview later today, I might want to see how it's going. So I might want to see how many people have given this person a higher recommendation or not. That's something that's typically easier to do with a visual than with text. So even though we've gotten some built-in controls here, in this case, we're showing the recommendation as text because that's what the field is in the database, we can just write a custom control here as well. And then we just have the whole power of jQuery Mobile, jQuery UI, our partner ecosystem, all that stuff is just readily available, and we can pop it into the DOM. So here's our render function. And what I've done, just so you guys understand that there's no smoke and mirrors here, is before we got started, just to kind of speed up the demo a little bit, I just went ahead and added a few CSS classes. And you can see that this is really basic. All it's doing is it's going to put a box on the screen, and it'll be red if the person has a no higher rating, and it'll be green if the person has a higher rating. So all we need to do is create a basic div for a custom control that uses that CSS class. So we'll stick that in. Here it is, pretty basic. You'll see that one thing that we're doing here is that because everything in our HTML client is done asynchronously, that's definitely a best practice, particularly with data-driven apps, using a standard data binding mechanism is definitely the recommended way to go. If we just bound directly or sort of looked up that value statically, sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. All right, so let's quickly rerun the app. We should see our new control showing red or green. And then what we're actually going to do next is jump in and make that more interactive. So let's see who we've created some feedback for. Oh, I forgot that I have my filter still turned on, so I'm not the interviewer. So I better make myself the interviewer, or else I'm not going to see them. Sorry, let me change one thing. I'm just going to comment out that filter code because It's going to make the next part of the demo, where we make all of those updates in real time, a lot more compelling. So this is why we weren't seeing any feedback. I'll just go ahead and comment that out. And now I should start to see feedback that's already created. It was actually just a test if you were paying attention. All right, so here's our custom control. You can see that we're now seeing that feedback because you turned off that row level filtering. And that's kind of cool. But one of the things that you would expect is that we actually don't want people to think about this as a website. We want people to think about this as an immersive app, an app that really extends O365. And people don't really expect to have to refresh the browser in order to get changes. If I'm running an app, I expect live tiles and all that kind of stuff. And we'd really like to bake that into the app. This isn't something that Lightswitch does natively, but because of all the stuff that's available in the ASP.NET project and in the ASP.NET runtime, we can just wire in some SignalR here to automatically update this. So just to show that it's really not working today, what I'm going to do is we'll go ahead and rerun this app, and I'm just going to create a separate browser window so you can kind of see that there's no smoke and mirrors here. And maybe while we're at it here, I'm just going to tear this off. One of the other cool things, we haven't talked a lot about the UI, but we have added support for a broader range of devices. We know that that's just kind of something that users expect. So we're running on this big widescreen here, and we're using these tiles. But if we were to shrink down to the phone, you'd see that we actually get a really good experience here. Incremental scrolling, all that sort of stuff is just baked in. So if we go in and modify our feedback here, so our feedback is down at the bottom now. Make this a little bit bigger. We'll change this to no higher, and in the meantime, we'll open up this person. We're just going to see that right now, it's a totally manual process. So we'll go ahead and save that. You'll see that over here it's in red, over here it's in green. I'd have to refresh the browser, the same old problem. All right, so let's fix that by just adding SignalR to our middle tier that's already been pre-created. And then we'll add a little bit of code to our JavaScript client as well. So all we have to do is first add SignalR. How many folks are familiar with SignalR? I know it got mentioned in the keynote. I assume, OK. So real briefly, SignalR is basically a way to do real-time communication between two HTTP endpoints. It sounds like something you would use for something like a game or some kind of demo scenario, but actually for business apps, it makes a ton of sense because, again, it's just removing the need for the browser to refresh. So we'll look for SignalR. Once that's installed, really all we have to do is do precisely the same logic that we would do inside a standard ASP.NET, MVC, or whatever type of project that you're building. So we'll go ahead and install that. What this is doing is it's just adding all the references to our existing web project. There's nothing fancy going on. And then what we'll do is we'll just open up a new HTTP route that tells our server to start broadcasting these messages. And again, if you're familiar with ASP.NET development, this should look very familiar. So we'll go ahead and comment that out. I'm pretty sure I need to add some other references here. So what I'll do is, because we added that SignalR component to our project, now when we open the Add New Item dialog, we'll see that there's just some baked-in templates here. And I'm just going to call this my contact. I'm just using the name of the hub doesn't really matter. It's really just used to register something on the client that's going to receive those messages. All right, so now what we need to do is whenever feedback is updated, we want to broadcast one of those messages. So we'll open up our interview feedback. And when it's updated, then we're just going to use that controller to broadcast a message. So feedback has been updated. I actually called this contact. And I think if we compile, that error should go away. Had a reference, and we're good. OK, so now when we go and update interview feedback from any client, our client, something like Excel or what have you, it's going to broadcast this message. So nothing's going to happen on our screens unless we actually listen for that. So on our view, when on our view candidate screen, you'll see that there's just a basic entry point that gets called when the screen gets created. So what we can do here is just add, again, this is exactly the same code that you would write if you were writing SignalR code today. Is all this is doing is it's registering a connection with our middle tier, and then it's listening for the broadcast message. All right. So this is actually a good time to drill into what exactly this app is composed of, because we need to go and add some script references as well. SignalR includes both a client-side runtime and a server-side runtime. The NuGet package that we added on the server added all of our server references, but we also need to add that NuGet package on the client. It's actually a slightly different one because it's all in JavaScript. And here's our JavaScript client. We'll go ahead and install that. Now we open default.htm, you can kind of get a sense for what's going on. So our app that we haven't talked about what's actually inside the client yet is really just a plain old single page application. Everything is done on the client. We're fetching data via AJAX and OData. And these are just the built-in references that we have. So all we need to do now is just add a reference to those two pieces of those two scripts that were added via the NuGet package. So there's one here that's kind of a generated file, and that is the boilerplate code that knows how to listen for that specific endpoint, and the other is the actual runtime. Okay, so we've got the basics wired up here. Now what I want to do is just switch back to our JavaScript file. And here's the callback that will be invoked when we get a message from the server. But we're not actually doing anything. And one of the problems that you commonly find in these types of apps is that there's a really CRUD-based approach to dealing with the data on the client. So one of the things you can do that we've added most recently is you can go ahead and access all of the data that you're seeing on the screen via a single API. So here the screen is passed in. And remember that all of our data is fetched asynchronously. So we're going to call this get interview feedback. Sorry, I just realized the font is still really small. I'll bump that up a little bit for you guys. So again, we're getting strong IntelliSense. We're just a plain old JavaScript project inside Visual Studio here. And we're going to get the interview feedback. That's an asynchronous call. So if you've written any Windows apps, particularly for Windows 8, you're probably familiar with this pattern of getting back a promise object and then invoking some work. So here's our interview feedback collection. So basically what this code means is that we're going to go fetch the interview feedback collection from the server. When we get a result, this callback will be called. And at this point, all that we need to do is say that we want to refresh just that one collection, because it would be sort of lame to go and refresh the entire page. So let's try this out. What we should see once this is up and running is that even with quite a lot of data loaded, we had, I think there's about 100 or 200 candidates in the list, only that single candidate's interview feedback will be refreshed because of the way that we've written that code. And it looks like I have forgotten a reference somewhere. Thank you. That looks right. I must have. What's that? Oh, did I paste in the wrong? Thank you. Your eyes are much better than mine. All right, so as you can see, that sort of string-based registration is what was preventing us from working there. But while this is up and going, I'm going to open a few browser windows and peel this one off again. So let's go ahead and open up some interview feedback. We'll just leave that one open. And this is Mr. Wilkins. So we'll go ahead and edit this. And let me actually make it so you can see here. So we'll change this to no hire, and then all we need to do is save. And we should see the update immediately. I should probably change it so you'll actually see a difference. Okay, so pretty cool. I mean, if you're familiar with ASP.NET and SignalR, there's nothing crazy going on. You can clap, it's okay. There was one clap slide. But you know, this is one of those things where I think as a team member, we often get requests for like, oh man, we really want this particular feature, we want that sort of thing. And we often look at it as, what is the path for doing that in Visual Studio today and with the platform that we have, and how hard is that? As you can see, there's a little bit of code to wire up. Certainly, we could make the experience easier, but definitely understand that all of the things that you see in the demos here at Build and throughout Visual Studio are still readily available. Sometimes we don't always talk about them in this sort of optimized, highly productive path, but they're definitely still possible. So with that in mind, just out of curiosity, how many people have actually used things like SignalR in a business app? Not many. You should try it out. I guarantee you that your users will thank you. This is a really ugly looking app. I haven't spent any time on it. But it really does add quite a lot to the user experience. It gets rid of the whole idiom of having to refresh the browser. And in many scenarios like this, you actually only need to refresh just a tiny smidgen of the data. In this case, when I'm walking down the hall, all I really care about is interview feedback for the particular candidate for whom I'm interviewing today. That's a really small chunk of code that you'd have to write. Certainly, if you wanted to refresh the entire data workspace on the client, you'd want to think more deeply about how to interact with those broadcast messages. But for simple scenarios like this, it's a really powerful tool. All right. So along a similar vein, you know, one of the things that we also get asked about as a team is, you know, there are a lot of client-server interactions that a business app needs that aren't CRUD interactions. So all the code that we've written today is really surrounding the notion of either we're querying data, that's where that filter clause came in, or we're saving data, that's where some of that validation logic that you saw in the keynote comes in. But often there's quite a bit of additional code and additional interaction that you might want to introduce into the app that doesn't fit that model. And unless you've been living under a rock, you probably haven't, since you're attendees at Build, and you guys tend to be the cream of the crop developer audience. We have this thing called Web API. You've heard of Web API? Okay, good. So the cool thing about that is that, again, we didn't add anything special inside our tool, because really Web API is the premier way to craft REST services from a .NET hosted service. So what I'm going to do here is just add one of those Web APIs to our project. Again, this is just a standard template. There's nothing fancy about this. I'm going to call it my interview stats. And at this point, you see that we get the basic HTTP verbs. If you're not familiar with the code that you're looking at here, really all this means is that The controller gets called, and there's some basic routing built into Web API that knows which HTTP verb maps to which method. So obviously, the HTTP gets get mapped to the get method. If you pass a parameter and so on, that all gets mapped. In this case, we're just going to do some basic data fetching. And again, one of the things that we often get asked for are support for aggregates. This is the ability to, you know, roll up a bunch of data from the database without having to return all the data and do that processing in the middle tier or on the client. So Link would be a great way to do that. And we're just going to return an IEnumerable. And one of the things that you'll see here is that once we import the same namespaces that we're using in our code behind, then we can get access to precisely the same data, and we can still access it in a strongly typed way. So we'll set a var context. So there's one class. If you're interested in using things like Web API, MVC, any of that stuff, and you're wanting to use it inside a Lightswitch app, or you're building a business app for O365, remember this one class. It's sort of the gateway drug into all Lightswitch data. And once you use one of these and instantiate it, then you have access to the exact same API surface that we have in our code behind. So if we go ahead and look at this, you'll see that here's our data workspace. Here's our intrinsic data, the candidates. It's all strongly typed. It's precisely the same API. It's not a wrapper or anything. And most recently, we've added support for pretty much all the link operators that are used commonly anyway. And the benefit of all this is that because we're based on EF, you heard a little bit about async in EF and how that's fully supported now, all that will apply here. So let's say that I have, you know, here I only have 100 candidates, so it doesn't really make sense to do anything crazy. But let's say that we have a, you know, few gigabytes or whatever of data. You'd really want to think deeply about how you're actually fetching that data. You know that you might have a lot of users, maybe you have a particular load at a particular time of the year. Using things like async and all the new things in EF are just going to make the experience significantly better. So in this case, what I'm going to do is use this to write a basic link query. So I'll just return the results of, we'll grab the interview candidates. So one of the things that you'll notice is that we have to type this application data thing. Every time we add a new data source into the project, it's created in a separate namespace, and that just helps disambiguate names and things like that. And maybe I only want to focus on the candidates in this particular year. What I'm actually going to do is create a roll-up query that shows trends in when interview candidates actually come in to interview. So here's our interview date dot year. And then I can just roll that into a group by query. And I'll group it by the month that they come in. And I really don't want to include all of the information that's returned from this query. It would be, you know, in real life, this would be a very, very large data set. So now I'm just going to project out just the aggregate values themselves. So we'll say that the month key. So that's the key of the group. And then we'll return the count of that. Again, really simple stuff. Sorry. Method, not a property. So really simple stuff. I think things like Link are super powerful. We don't always talk about them quite as much anymore, just because they're sort of the de facto way to do this type of operation. Totally supported today. Of course, Lightswitch has a modeled queried experience as well, whereby you can author a lot of these queries in UI. But I wanted to show this today just to kind of give you a sense of, you know, all the other ways that you can interact with the data and the concepts that you've built up in the UI. So we are using the generic one, apparently. So that should fix it. OK, so now we're going to return this. It's just going to return a basic JSON blob. That's the default serializer here. What I'd really like to do is display this in some more compelling way. A typical way would be to use a chart. And again, we don't add any support for charts in the box, because primarily there's a huge ecosystem already out there today that frankly does a much better job than anything we would ever do. So let's just switch over to some of the partners that we have. I highlighted just two here. Widgmo is built by Component One. I highlighted Widgmo because they actually have some built-in templates inside the Lightswitch experience for the HTML client. You should definitely check them out. They have things like screen templates for the experience that you're seeing today. I'm showing it to you manually so that you can kind of understand how the pieces fit together. But they actually have a pretty sweet design time experience that is much lighter on code. So they have everything you would expect. There's also Kendo. Kendo is built by Telerik. They have a very similar set of controls. The important thing about these controls is that they are pure client-side. These aren't server-side controls, which are going to, you know, project a bunch of UI back to the client. They're rendered entirely on the client, which really makes them a great fit for our HTML client. Now, let's just look at the code for some of these as an illustration of what is really unique and what is very similar about Lightswitch coding and sort of our general principles. So if we look at this, it's a basic line chart. And it's got a div in here that describes the chart. And then they're just using jQuery to enhance that div with a bunch of their CSS, which displays it. Now, there's a few things in here that are kind of important. In this case, the series data is a line. And you'll see that they're actually doing local data here. It's not a remote call. But if we switch over to their example here, we'll see that all they're doing is calling an endpoint. What we're going to do is take this code, plug it into our Lightswitch app, and just replace this with the endpoint of our web API that we just wrote. And then they're just going to plug in a couple of fields that are going to data bind to. So it comes back as a JSON array. And we just need to tell it what are the properties that should be the X and Y values for the chart. So remember, we created that link query with the projection, calling the two fields month and count. So that's what we're going to use. And I'm really only showing this code to show that there's quite a lot of similarity. I created a little snippet for this one just so I didn't have any unintended typos. But really, you can pretty much copy and paste this code precisely into VS and just get working. All right, so let's go back to our browse candidates screen. And I'm just going to change this to a column layout. Again, not really too focused on UI aesthetics today. And I'm going to add a custom control here. And again, the important thing about the code for custom controls is you want to just remember that we're using jQuery Mobile under the hood. jQuery Mobile is a means of expanding DOM elements. So when you create a DOM, you know, statically as HTML, jQuery Mobile will take that and expand it with all of the classes that you put on it. So when you write code, just remember that you're actually writing, you're inserting elements into the DOM before jQuery Mobile expands it. So what you insert may not be precisely what you see in the DOM when you run it, because jQuery Mobile does a transform over it. All right, so I've already added the references to those Kendo UI libraries that we just saw, only because it requires a license, and the NuGet package doesn't have the charts. So now we'll just go and insert our chart. And again, let's just look at the code really quick. There's nothing crazy here. We're calling our web API endpoint. It's dot dot slash because our HTML client lives under a subdirectory on the web server. We're finding that. And we're just showing the interviews apparently by month, not by year. And these are the two fields on that JSON array that we're binding to. Again, if you look at this code in comparison to what we saw in their sample, it's almost exactly the same. And that's really intentional. You know, a lot of people have asked for a more static HTML editing experience. And that is something that's very much on our radar. But we also know that a lot of these scenarios just are much easier to write in code. So let's go ahead and run our app here. And we should see our chart. The cool thing about this, too, is that because everything is async, things like charts and stuff like that, if you're binding them directly to LightSwitch data, they're actually going to present really well out of the box without you having to do anything. So it's not like the page is going to be blocked while it loads. Instead, you're just going to get a compile error, runtime error. So let's see. I might have forgotten to add the Kendo UI reference. Let's see. We'll go back to the sample. Well, I'm not sure why that doesn't work. Did I data bind it incorrectly? What's that? Oh, did I? That shouldn't matter, though. On the API URL call? What's that? It looks right. I'm not seeing what the issue is. Typically, when we get errors like this, it's actually because I have pasted in something without an end bracket or something. We don't have to debug it here. It's not super important. Let me just check one last thing. All right. Well, that was kind of the last demo anyway. Maybe if we have a few more minutes left at the end, I do want to have a chance to wrap up. We can switch back and get it debugged. So we looked at just one kind of what I call the happy path today of building a provider-hosted O365 app. You saw a lot of what you're getting for free in that app as we run it, things like the Chrome. We didn't have to spend any time on the styling of the app because we're just inheriting all the CSS and the styling that you get for Office for free. We have the app kind of pre-configured to run really well as an Azure website. I will say this is really the best option. There are other Azure hosting options for these apps as well. But really, for many of the apps that you'll build here, the website is really the best choice. Sort of looking at our roadmap, we have a few things that are in the preview, just in case you're kind of wondering, and a few things that are sort of coming soon. So we looked at team development, checking things into source code control, building a continuous integration environment with our own process templates. Those are all things you can do with the preview. We'll be coming out with some better blog posts on how to do that. Support for the database projects, support for NuGet. All the stuff that you got for free there, we actually added all those fields just automatically to entities for things like who created the entity, when was it last updated. All of that's just added for you automatically. And again, that's just kind of bridging some of the gaps that you get in Office. With things like lists, you get all that information for free. And it's just added now to your intrinsic data as well. Other things that are on our roadmap, they're not in the preview, are that support for fully, you know, sort of hands-off continuous integration where all the process templates were just there. Right now, if you want to go through that process, shoot me a mail. We'll have some blog posts, like I said. It's not that hard to set up your own build server, but it is something that we do hope to have just work out of the box with TFS Online in the very near future. Support for documents. The main thing that's not there today is just the controls. And frankly, you know, we sort of sometimes struggle as a team as to how many controls we should really build as a Visual Studio team. You can certainly build them yourself. We have a few samples. I think I put a sample out on our blog a couple of months ago on how to do this manually using some of the techniques that you saw today with Web API. So certainly possible today, just not as optimized as some of the smoke and mirrors that you saw in the keynote. Support for the Active Directory integration. Again, it's all there today. We're already using the CSOM or the client-side object model in our middle tier. You can get at all that information. It will get better with time. AD really is the sort of cornerstone of a lot of these apps. Using AD as our identity foundation really makes a lot of these scenarios a lot easier to build. Most of these apps surround people and documents. That's kind of why you're seeing these sorts of things on the roadmap. The other thing that you might not have noticed in the app is that we have done quite a bit of behind-the-scenes work to clean up what the app looks like on a widescreen. Historically, if you saw our HTML client running on a desktop, it was kind of clunky. All the fonts were really big. So there's just some built-in media queries now that query the size of the browser and scale the fonts, choose different padding and that sort of stuff to work on a variety of devices. You don't have to do anything to get this to work. It's just kind of baked into the theme. So I wanted to close today with kind of a look forward and really a request from you guys to really seek us out either at the Build conference here or online and give us your feedback on kind of this change in direction a little bit around how we think about business apps. We really only looked at just one very narrow path today of building this kind of three-tier Azure website hosted app. There's certainly more to this story that we envision coming online. I think the main things that we see on the near-term horizon are just really taking advantage of some of the stuff that really is super compelling as an app platform in Office. You know, I think don't be surprised if we take a bigger bet on Office because we feel like it's the right bet for business apps. I really can't think of a better business app platform available today. We have Kelly, are you around? I can't actually. Okay, so Kelly standing in the back is a user researcher on our team, and I wanted to point you to Kelly because he's sticking around the conference. I'm around as well. And he'd actually like to just anybody who's willing to sit down with him for 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever, it'd be great to have him chat with you because what he does on our team is he really researches the broader context of what challenges you are facing as developers in building these sorts of apps. You know, I think a lot of times we get really wrapped around the technology and the very here and now sometimes is lost, right? Because we're always focused on what do we need to do for you guys so that when you start picking this up, you know, your app that's going to come out in 6 months is going to be top-notch. Whereas, you know, I think we can really benefit from understanding a lot of the challenges you're facing right now. So he's sticking around. Kelly, I don't know if you want to add anything else to your spiel here. Great. We're about out of time, so I don't have a ton of time for questions with the official session on. I will be sticking around for the whole rest of the afternoon, so feel free to come grab me. I'd really love to chat with you. It's really useful for me to hear how you guys have used LightSwitch or kind of have thought about it, even if you're not using it. It would really be great to talk to you. So thanks again.